Om sahana bhavatu, sahana punaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Sakshat kritat madhisam yaka avipariyaya bhaditaha avipariyaya bhaditaha kimichan kasya kamaya kimichan kasya kamaya shariram manasanjwarit shariram manasanjwarit. Sakshat krita atma dihi samyak avipariyaya bhaditaha kim ichan kasya kamaya shariram anisanjvaret. Remember this, kim ichan kasya kamaya shariram anisanjvaret is the last line of this, of the verse which this chapter 7 is expounding upon. Kimichan Atmanam chait, this is the verse, Atmanam chait vijaniyat ayamasmi iti purushaha. If one should have vijnanam, means sakshat jnanam, direct knowledge, clear understanding of the self, as if a person, if a purusha, if a person should know this self as I am this purusha, I am this atma, which is satchit ananda, this atma which is limitless. I should know myself as I am. So for the person who knows the self as it is, myself as I am, then kim ichan, desiring what? Kasya kamaya, and for whose sake? Desiring what and for whose sake? Shariram anisanjvare, that person would be worrying or concerned or overheated, you know, agitated by what the sharira, what the body is doing, what I'm doing here. And they say what the shariram is doing, it's not, you know, just what this physical body is doing, what I am doing, this physical upadhi, this body, mind, sense, organs, karya, karana, sangata, this person here, what I'm doing, what am I doing here? In terms of what do I need, what will make me happy, what has happened to me, what is going to happen to me, getting myself into an agitated state over all of that. Desiring what and for whose sake would that person become so overheated, so upset? So they would, that's the idea. So now, all the way up to here now, up to 135, it has been on the first line. What does it mean to have direct sakshat jnanam, nishta, to gain real knowledge of myself? What is that knowledge? And how does that knowledge take place? All of that has been discussed now. Now for this last half, the second half of the verse is going to be discussed. So he says, sakshat krita atma dihi, the one whose buddhi, the one whose knowledge of the Atma has been made immediate. Sakshat krita. Sakshat means it's here. It's absolutely aparoksha to me. Sakshat means it's right in front of my face. It's right here. Krita, it's been made sakshat, means I've gained aparoksha jnanam. It's very clear. Myself is completely as I am, completely present to me. So the one who has that knowledge, that buddhi, that knowledge of the self, has the aparoksha jnanam of myself. I know directly, immediately myself. I recognize myself. How about that? I recognize the self that I am, the atma that I am in fact, is absolutely recognized by my mind. I have that knowledge of myself. So that sakshat krita atma dihi, I have the direct immediate knowledge of myself. So for such a person, and samyak, very clearly it is there, samyak, and avipariyaya bhaditaha, as well as there's the negation of vipariyaya, viparita bhavana, vipariyaya, error. Right? Not only do I know myself, the error, the erroneous conceptions have been sublated. This is that bodhita. So let's look at this word bodhita that Swamiji translates as sublated, negated, sublated. What it actually means, if you look bodhita, not bodhita, but say you were look sublated up in the dictionary where you can get more of an understanding of it, that we can see why Swamiji has actually chosen that word. If you sublate something, you know the truth of it, even though the thing itself doesn't necessarily go away. What is actually there can remain, but you see it differently. That's what means it's being negated. It's there, but it is negated. Okay? Like the sunrise and the sunset, it is there, but it's negated. You're still experiencing it, responding to it, but you're responding to it from the standpoint of your knowledge. And so now, even though the experience is there, the way you hold the experience is completely different because of your knowledge. That's what we mean by negation or sublation. And so here, this creation, when a person gains self-knowledge, nothing changes in terms of the actual creation. You still have the five elements, you still have your prarabdha that's unfolding before your eyes, you still have plenty of sukha and dukkha, you have experiences, you have all of the experiences that are unfolding in terms of the world, you still have this body with its sense of I. It's not like all of a sudden Atma flees the body. This body, in fact, is the Atma. Right? The Atma is not the body, but the body is the Atma. I mean, if there is no other being here other than the self. But you know, for the Ajnani, there's no bodhita. There's no sublation of that error, right? Because even now, for the Jivanmukta, the body enjoys consciousness. It is still my body, right? This sensation is there. It's my body. It doesn't become somebody else's body. So the ahankara, the sense of I, is still very much here. But I understand the sense of I much differently, much, much differently, because at the same time that this body is totally enjoying me, I also have aparoksha jnanam, direct immediate knowledge of the freedom of my own being that isn't going through any type of modification or change in the presence of this body. So I'm not modifying as this body, even though this body is not at all separate from me. That is sakshat. That's direct. That's the experiential reality. It's my knowledge of the experiential reality that is there. It's not like I've gained an experience. I've gained knowledge of my experience that's brought about this sublation. The sublation of prior to my knowledge, I had taken my being to be this body and to be my mind. Period. Now I become an existent individual, body, mind, sense organs here, existing in this world. Now, all of my thinking, all of my philosophy, all of the way I make meaning of my life is based upon that ajnanam. It's based upon that error. Yeah. Now, once I gain knowledge, it's not that the body disappears or the world is no longer perceived or I don't have a thinking mind. All of these things still remain. But now, the same thing being there, it's now recognized I look at the experience differently. I understand the experience differently because I've been able to differentiate the constancy of my own self that's not changing amidst all of this changing. So I've recognized clearly the satyam mitya. Right? So that with that recognition, my whole way that my mind responds to myself, to itself, to the body and the world is totally different. Right? Even though the same experience is there. So that's what we mean by sublation. The ajnanam, the ajnanam that has caused this ignorant take on the experience, that ignorant take is removed. The experience remains. See what I mean? So that's very important. That's why we use bodhita. The experience has been negated. The prior way I had been with the experience has been negated. That's why we say sublated. Because it's not as though the experience goes away. Experience doesn't go away. As long as I have this upadi, this body, mind, sense organs, which is exhausting itself with the exhaustion of the prarabdha karma, the karma that's caused me to take this birth, as long as that is happening, this karma, the prarabdha karma is still there, I will experience this body, the sense organs, the mind, and the world, and all of the vagaries of my prarabdha, all of the ups and downs that the prarabdha has to throw my way, all of that will be taking place, just like for everybody else. But my buddhi, my jnanam, totally changes the way I respond to all of that, because I'm seeing it, even though this experience is the same, I'm seeing it differently. And all of my response to the reality of this experience is based upon that aparoksha jnanam, what I now see very clearly. That nishta is that clarity. I see it so clearly. Since I see it, I respond to what I see. I respond to what I know, as does everybody else. Everybody responds to what they know, to their take. So somebody has a lot of jiva srishti, you know, there's Ishwara, and then you have your own projection on it. What are you responding to? Your projection. You're responding to your projection. As you roll that projection in, you know, then you have more reality that you're responding to. We respond to what we see. You see a snake on a rope, what do you respond to? Not the rope. You respond to the snake. In the tenth man's story, the tenth man thinks, you know, the tenth man is drowned in the river. What is he responding to? He's responding to the drowned man in the river. All of the emotions, all of the reality that that person is experiencing is viparyaya. It's erroneous. It's responding to what is not really there. Right? But not to that person. To that person, it is really there. It's all pratibhasika. Right? It's the created reality based on that's a result of your ajnanam. But that's how the life is. And so say we remove that ajnanam, and you can't, to remove the ajnanam, to remove the ignorance here in reference to self-knowledge means, as to remove any ignorance, you have to have knowledge of the vastu. The vastu is what is actually there. The vastu is the thing. The actual thing that is there is the vastu. In relative terms, we'll say the vastu, what is actually there, is the rope. The projection is the snake. The vastu is the rope. That's the actual thing that is there. Of course, when we analyze vastu, it always resolves into Brahman. Right? In the end, the only vastu that's there is Brahman. Because everything else breaks up infinitely divisible. You can't find a vastu, a real thing in this creation. But we can use it as an example. Right? But in the end, the vastu is reality itself. It's Brahman itself, the Atma. That is the vastu. And so, say I have direct, immediate knowledge of myself, then the projections, you know, the vikshepa, the projections upon myself, by my mind, the projections upon myself and upon this creation are not there. If they are not there, then I'm not responding to this reality in the way that I did respond when the ajnana, when the ignorance was there. That's how it is. So what he says is, for a person who has this sakshat jnana, this direct, immediate knowledge of myself, for whom this, the air, is not there, it's bodhita, it's sublated, I don't see, I don't have that error anymore, and so I'm not responding to the experience in that way. Even if the ahankara, see, this is, even the body is here, the ahankara, the I notion is there, the mind and the thoughts that enjoy consciousness are there, it doesn't mean that I take myself to be that. At the same time, I recognize that this body is nothing but that. The sense organs are nothing but that. The mind is nothing but that. But I am completely free of all of that. And that is my direct, immediate recognition. So it's not theoretical. It's something that I have seen, that I understand. And so that person, desiring what? And for whose sake does that person get so worked up over what the body is doing? Because the nature, what is the swarupa of my being, is the wholeness that I seek. And so now, That is what we're going to be looking at. Why this verse, Kenichan Kasikamaya. There are another little thing to introduce about this, why this verse. Knowledge, when we say moksha, liberation is jnana, is knowledge. Right? There's nothing here to be, you know, gained. So in Sanskrit we say, prapasya prapti, the attainment of what is already attained. And so there is nothing to, there is no karma pala. When you gain knowledge, there's no karma pala. You're not gaining something new. And so then the question would be, from the Karmakanda, from the first part of the Vedas, or from the Samsari, well, if I'm already Brahman, here I am, you know, what good does that do me? the Ajnani, the Samsari says, if you're telling me, I'm already Brahman, okay, I'm already Brahman, and I'm not happy. So where's the pala? Where's the fruit? What makes this knowledge useful? You know? And so now we have to really look at what is the pulla? What is the fruit? What do I get out of this? How does knowledge result in liberation? How does let's put it in another way, which is exactly what I've been talking about now, but this now these verses are going to be getting into this. How does the removal of ignorance, right, free me? How can the removal of something free me? How can knowledge free me? Because if I remove the ignorance, I'm just going to get what is already there. That's the idea. How can what is already there be liberation? Because I'm not liberated. So that all has to be understood. What is the relationship of ajnanam to my feeling of bondage? And what is the relationship of the removal of that ajnanam to my freedom? And so here in this verse, which is now he's dilating right into the 300 verses, you think of it, the pala is told in the second line, is intimated in the second line. The first line says, the one who has that clarity, that immediate recognition of myself as I am this Purusha, the Atma, is this one who is here. That's that Ayam Atma, that Ayam, that this, is pointing to the Aparoksha Jnana. The one who knows the self as this, that this Purusha, the one who knows that. Then, desiring what and for whose sake would that person worry about the body? So now there's something to know, right? Oh, you mean the person who knows the Atma as this, you know, would not have these desires or would not worry about the body, you know, or would not, for whose sake is that person going to be worried about anything? Then you think, oh, okay, there's something to be gained from this knowledge. What would that be? Right? And Swamiji's done this verse, he's used it as an occasion to talk about what we usually think of in terms of karmapala, you know. We usually only think of a gaining something, right, in terms of action. That's how I fulfill my desires, is in terms of an action. So that's what we know. And so when we analyze the ways that we can fulfill our desires through action, there's four. There's four basic ways. First one is called, you can really do them in any order, but the first one is called opium. I can reach it. I can travel to it. I can go to it, right, to gain it. I can get it. I can acquire it. I can reach it. I can go to it. That's one. We all know that. That's one way. Another one is called utpadyam. I can create it. I can give birth to it. I can create it. I can make it. You know, utpadyam. Another one is called vikaryam. I can modify it. I can change it. You know, if something is broken or it's not quite how I like it, I can fix it. I can change it. I can work with it. You know, modify it. It's another thing I can do. I can do these things. And the other one is samskaryam. I can cleanse it and clean it. And this is one that especially spiritual seekers think. Samskaryam, you know? Let me scrub it. Let me scrub my body. Let me scrub my mind. Let me clean it. If I clean it, clean it, clean it, clean it, clean it, maybe in that way I would become liberated. Because we're used to thinking of gaining something in terms of our action, so we can reach it. Like, even think of it like this. In meditation, we will think of reaching the self, right? Through subtle travel, can reach the self. That's karma, right? I'm taking my mind to go somewhere. But you know what? My self is restless, you know, and so I have to modify it. I have to change it to make it quiet. So now that vikarya can, let me, this agitated mind, let me just work with it and then make it, you know, make it shanti. But it's not shanti and it's agitated because it's not pure. I should change my behavior that becomes a way of cleaning. I need to scrub it and clean it. Or maybe I could take vikarya, samskaryam in reference to my mind. Let me do some japa and some pranayama. Anything to try to quiet, absolutely quiet in the mind, to make it as pure as possible, as shiny and clean as possible. So I'm trying in all of these different ways often, right, to produce an effect through karma, right? And then if I can produce these effects and then hold it, either I travel to the Atma, you know, apya, I try to reach the Atma, got to hold it then. Because I've gone there and I've got to stay there. Or my mind is agitated, you know, and so now I've got to modify it. But now I've modified it, I have to hold it there. See what I mean? There's no end to it. As long as you're within karma, you're within time and space, so you're always in the process of doing, of achieving, in one of these four ways. So these four ways, you can probably have little subheadings under them, but they're pretty, you know, complete. So you're engaged in this activity all of the time. But what is the vision of the top pariya of the Upanishad is what? You are Brahman. You are Brahman. And that's why the samsari, even the mumukshu will say, oh, well, God, if I'm already Brahman, that is such bad news. But what can I do to make that Brahman, which is supposed to be such good news, you know, what can I do to make me feel like I am Brahman? What can I do? So what is the problem there? You see, it's very, very confusing because we get this idea of karma and karmapala and all of the activity that I need to do in order to achieve something. We superimpose that type of buddhi on gaining self-knowledge. And gaining self-knowledge doesn't have anything at all to do with doing. The gain of sight self-knowledge has only to do, like with any knowledge, it has only to do with the removal of ignorance. Not with achieving, not with purifying, not with modifying, not with creating. It has to do only with the removal of ignorance. And the removal of ignorance can only take place by knowledge. And if the problem is one of ignorance and the solution is knowledge, which is actually, if we'll see in a minute, that's how it really has to be, there is nothing to be gained. There's a self to be discovered, right? A self that is already here, not even discovered, that's even a bad word. How about recognized? I have to recognize the self that I am. And who has to recognize it? The mind that is mistaken. The mind doesn't not know myself, and so it's mistaken me to be other than what I am. And that is the process. If the process is a non-process, the process is the process of removing ignorance. And in that removal of ignorance, is there a pala? And I would say, in the removal of ignorance, there is a huge pala. There's a huge gain, huge result, because even if we don't know what it is, just think about it like this. If I take the world and myself to be something that is, let's just say, the opposite of what it actually is. Say I take the world and my being to be the opposite of what it is. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, for the jnani, what is day for the jnani is night for the... What is day for the jnani, what is day for the jnani is night for the ajnani. Right? It's opposite. With Swamiji, you'll say it's ulta. It's ulta. It's the opposite.
Mm.
So just say that the reality of who you are and what this is the opposite of what you think it is as an ajnani. Then how do you think, how well do you think you're doing here? I mean, it's...
I'm doing the opposite.
You know, I mean, it's a mess. It's a mess because we are, if, say, the reality is that my being is limitless and this creation is an expression of my being. It's what we call manifest knowledge. And that this whole creation, if the entire creation is an expression of my being, it's manifest knowledge of my being. That my being itself is changeless and whole and complete. It is the very, it is Ananda itself. Say that's the reality. But as a samsari, as a jiva who's subject to this ajnanam, what is my reality? It's not that this whole creation is my being, it's an expression of me. It's that I am a limited being, subject to death, walking around in this real creation. I am this body living in a real creation. Not that this creation is a manifestation of my own being and myself is changeless. That I don't have any idea. And so I walk around looking for myself, looking for my wholeness, looking for my comfort zone, you know, where I can say all is well with me, where I can relax. And I can't find that. I cannot find it because in the mitya, in the manifest creation, it doesn't exist. That comfort zone of I am whole and complete, nobody can take that away from me, I can relax now. That doesn't exist here. Because the creation is totally, every single part of it is subject to birth and death and change. There is no comfort zone. It doesn't exist. Right? You only have momentary glimpses of it. There is literally no place here to relax. You know? And so you have to, if you just think about your mind in that samsari condition, the mind looks for places to momentarily land and take a breath. You can rest here for a moment. Rest just for a moment until it starts shaking. Then you move to the next place where you can rest there for a moment. Then you go to the next where you can get your breath there for a moment. But there's no place that you can just go, okay, I'll go with me no matter. Because there is no place like that in the creation or in any upadhi. It doesn't exist. It's not there. Right? But that is the nature of the adhishtanam, of what is actually there. That is the nature of the self. And so when the mind recognizes that, it is such a relief. The mind itself recognizes that its very self is the stable refuge. That its very being is the stable, changeless refuge, is the very source of Ananda. So the mind recognizes that, and then recognizing that, how is it going to go back here in desiring what and for whose sake that it gets all upset out here? Because there is no solution out here for it to bother getting upset about. It's not like it goes out here and once again thinks, well, there really is a solution out here, and if I could just do this and just do that, then I would be happy. That's all gone. That's a jnanam. That's removed. So the mind doesn't think that way anymore. That mind that has the dignyanam, has clarity, it doesn't think that way. It doesn't respond to the creation that way. So how does it be in the creation? It exists in the creation as Ishvara. This creation is Ishvara. This is my prarabdha karma. This is the life. I experience Ishvara. That's what it is. I experience Ishvara. I experience Ishvara. I experience Ishvara in the mind. experience Ishwar in the buddhi, I experience Ishwar in the sense organs, I experience Ishwar as the sukha and dukkha, I experience Ishwara. That is it. What do I ask of Ishwara? Nothing really. I do what is to be done. I don't need to ask something of Ishwara. Though I can, that's also Ishwara. But asking is bhadita. Why? Because I already am the whole. Myself isn't going to improve by any amount of enjoyment, and it's not going to become less by any amount of papa, by any amount of difficult situations, all of which we will have plenty. It's not, they don't go away. And so that, kasikamaya, that's what they're talking about in this verse. There is a wonderful pulla to all of this. And so now he's going to spend a lot of time talking about that. So let's go on to the next verse. He's now talking, in this verse, he's talking a little bit more about the buddhi of the jnani. Jagannityatvadhi bhavat. Akshipta kamya kamukha. Tayora bhave santapaha. Shamyen nisneha deepavat. Jagan mityatva dhi bhavat. Compound. Jagat mitya mityatva dhi bhavat. Akshitau kamya kamukau. Tayoho abhave santapaha. Shamyet nisneha deepavat. So talking now about the Jivan Mukta, the one who has nishta, clarity. Jagan mityatva dhi bhavat. Because of their being, the jnanam, the dhi, the buddhi. Buddhi means the knowledge is there. That's why they say dhi. It's jnanam, but it's knowledge in the buddhi. The buddhi knows. It's that clarity is there. The jagan, what clarity? Jagan mityatva. Because that clarity is there, that this creation, this universe, this jagat, this world is mitya. Okay? Mitya is such a vital word. Right? When we say spin, the translation of mitya is really problematic because it's often translated as apparent. Once mitya is translated as apparent, then this reality, this world is all apparent. The apparent word then usually morphs into illusory. Right? This is an apparent illusory world. When we get into those words, apparent, and even though there's some truth in the word apparent, but we have to define these words. Otherwise, when we use a word like apparent or illusory, it gains this kind of woo-woo. what I mean is... You know, it's as though it's all kind of ethereal, ephemeral. It's not real. It's just like an illusion. Like if you were to have like a hallucination or an illusion, this world is really just an hallucination of some sort. Then the idea comes. I've actually seen these things. That's why I'm bringing them up as what we call purvapakshas, things to negate. Okay. If I say it's illusory, then this is the problem. Illusory means, you know, like a hallucination type of thing. Then if you have knowledge, how will you be seeing this world? You'll be seeing it as an illusory hallucination. And you'll kind of see through it, right? You'll see through it. It's an illusion. It's an appearance. It's kind of ephemeral. And so if you have knowledge, this world will become a kind of a ephemeral type of hallucination for you. That'll all be very clear. That is really sad. That is not at all what is being said. Mithya, what mithya means is, it's got to get, the word mithya, it has to be accompanied by the word satyam. There is no mithya without satyam. Satyam means that which is the truth, the actual substance, the actual vastu, what the thing that is actually there, what is the reality. So if we use an example for satyam mithya that works very well, is rope snake, because you can see there very clearly what is the vastu. It's the rope. That's the vastu. That is what is actually there. The mithya is the snake, because the mithya, the rope, is what we call adhishtana. It's that without which the mithya can't exist. So Swamiji will often translate mithya as dependent reality. In order for that snake to exist, the rope must be there. That's what adhishtana means. The adhishtana is that which must be there for the mithya to be. Right? And so it must be there. If you remove the adhishtana, the mithya is not. Right? And so the relationship between satyam mithya is a non-dual relationship. See that? It's non-dual. There is no mithya other than the satyam. In the sense of, I mean, here we are experiencing all this mithya, but in terms of the actual being, what is actually there, is the satyam. Now look, we go to make, just to show this non-dual relationship, to make it more, even more solid, we can look at it in terms of clay pot. Satyam mithya. What is actually there, the adhishtanam, is the clay. Because without that clay, there can be no pot. So that's the satyam. The mithya has no existence apart from the satyam. Right? There's no distance. Right? There's no distance. And so it's not about woo-woo. The pot is not ephemeral. See that? The pot is not ephemeral. Because it is useful. Let me put it like this. It is useful. The pot is useful. But the truth of it is the clay. Right? So now here, this creation, we call it Vyavaharika Satyam. Vyavaharika Mithya. Vyavaharika Satyam, Ishwara's creation. It is useful. It is practical. It is infinitely orderly. It is an infinite order, right? And we have, you know, all kinds of sciences. We have science and sciences, which are an unfoldment of that infinite order, of that shared reality. But the thing is, this shared reality that is orderly, that is practical, that is useful, and that we engage in Vyavahara, just in our empirical transaction, it's a transactional world. If we analyze it to find out what is actually here, what is the actual being that is here, then we can't really find this world. We can't, in this world, we can't find a substance. We can't find an object in it. Because this world itself, everything that we perceive through the sense organs, it is infinitely divisible. It is subject to coming and going. Upon analysis, we can't find, you know, a thing here. And yet, the entirety of this creation enjoys a changeless being, a changeless existence that never is wavering at all. The sat, the existence itself, is never wavering. All the names and forms are continually wavering, coming and going, infinitely divisible. But what is actually here, the sat, is solid. That sat is the satyam. The very being that it enjoys, that is the satyam. If you were to remove the being away, then just as when we analyze this world, we can't find anything, there would be nothing here. What fills this world is the satyam. And so, what about when I discover that I am that satyam? which is the truth. The conscious being that I am is the one that is not subject to any type of modification. I am the Satyam, which the world enjoys. So here, what he's saying is, Jagan Mityatva, that D. Recognizing the Jagan Mitya, I can't, unless I've recognized myself as the Satyam. Right? There is, let me put it this way. If we say the Jagat is Mitya, let's look at what falls into the Mitya. All of this, all of you, are Mitya, of course. You're part of the Jagat. My body goes into it. It's also part of the Jagat. It's part of the world. My sense organs are part of the creation. My mind exists in duality. It's part of the creation. My ahankara is part of the creation. My buddhi is part of the creation. There's nothing here that isn't Jagat. So this whole thing is Mitya. But Mitya has no meaning without Satyam. So I can't have a Jagan Mityatva buddhi that includes my body, my mind, my sense organs, and this whole creation without recognizing Satyam. And to recognize Satyam, now I've thrown out the whole creation, including myself. I've given it all this Mityatva. What about me is left? That is the jnana. I need, you know, through Drik Drisha Viveka or whatever prakriyas we're using, I have to recognize this me, this, you know, ayam atma, that I have to have clear knowledge that this self is the Satyam. That this conscious being that I am is free from any type of change or modification. If I see that, if I recognize that, then this world can shine as mitya. If I have that mityatva buddhi, what does it mean? I am the truth of it. It means I recognize myself as the truth of this. Because otherwise, this is out there by itself. To recognize the mityatva of this, I have to recognize the satyam of myself. Right? So, he says, for the one who has this mityatva buddhi, or the jagat, which means that the body, mind, sense, organs, everything has to be included in that mitya, then what? Akshiptau kamya kamakau. The desired objects, kamya, all of the desired objects, and the kamaka, the one who desires them, all of those are cast off. Akshiptau means they're all thrown into the mitya. Right? Because this body, mind, sense organs, everything that makes me a jiva, that is mitya. So the desirer and the desired, both are mitya. The thinker and the thought, mitya. The seer and the seen, mitya. The doer and the done, mitya. Everything that exists within duality, the ahankara, mitya. Ahankara means I notion. This I thought, mitya. There is nothing here that is not mitya in terms of the body, the mind, the sense organs, creation. If all of this gains that mityatva buddhi, where is the kamaka, the desirer, and the desired? Mitya. What does mitya have to do with my being in terms of modifying it or changing it in any way? So what he says with that, once the desirer and the desired join the ranks of mitya, then he says, to yoho, in the absence of that, santapaha, the affliction, the burning, santapa means to be on fire. This fire, this santapaha, this fever, this affliction, when that's gone, this santapa, this burning, shamyate. Shamyate means becomes quiet. It's like the flames burn out, you know. The heat settles down. He gives an example. Nisneha deepavat. Just like an oil lamp. You know these little oil lamps that you have a little wick? Just like an oil lamp that runs out of oil. Sneha is oil. So he's using a double play on words here. Just like nisneha means free of oil, so the oil has run out. Adipa is the oil lamp. So just like the flame of the oil lamp when it's out of oil, right? How that becomes quiet, how that flame resolves, goes out. Sneha also means attachment. Sneha, affection, attachment, or, you know, I love you. Friendship, attachment, and all of this is a word for sneha, affection, you know, where I become attached to something means, you know, you are a source of my happiness. That's the idea. This idea of sneha, meaning I need you in order to be happy, that fades out. You have to understand something, though. That doesn't mean that ajnani, this is going to be another misunderstanding that can be really create zombies. Yeah. When you think, it's not that the love for others or for, you know, friendships and care and love, it's not that fades out. In fact, I have become free to love, free to have friendship, free to care, because I don't require you to be a certain way. And why wouldn't I require you to be a certain way or to be present or absent? You know, if you need to go, you need to go. I give you the freedom to be as you are. How can a person give that freedom really? I mean, without faking it, without lying. It's only if my mind is already free. In other words, if the happiness and the wholeness that I enjoy as a person, if that happiness and wholeness that is there in an abiding way that is not subject to loss, then I am free to let you be free. I am free or to let you be as you are. I'm able to love you as you are, to enjoy you as you are. If, on the other hand, the sneha is there, now we use the sneha, the attachment is there, the attachment, when we use the word like that, I am attached not to you. I am attached to my version of you. I am attached to the way that I need you to be. You know, and so it's important that you perform within those confines in order for me to be happy. Because that's the idea of sneha. You know, if I'm attached to you, if I love you because for my own happiness, then I can't give you the freedom to be. Whereas if I am happy and I just love you as you are because it's natural, in fact, this is another thing. Because of the nature of the self is ananda, because that is your very swarupa, that is your very nature, loving is not an act. It's not a job. It's not a karma. It's the very natural to you. In fact, when you're not upset, you're a loving person. That's your very svarupa. So that loving, caring, that's a natural behavior on the part of the upadhi, because it's harmonious with your very nature. And so the loving of another person is not a job. It's not an effort. It's not an act. It's just a natural, a state of your mind when your mind itself is secure and full. And the jnani's mind is very, very secure only because the atma is secure. Right? And the atma is not going to go away. And the atma is what I've always sought from the world, but now I found out where it actually is. And the atma is immutable. And the mind can't get away from it. So that mind relaxes. And so that's jnana nishtha, that's clarity. That means all of the vagaries of the mind and the things pulling it back and all of this are more or less not very problematic anymore. That's what we mean by nishtha. If you need to pull your mind back, it's not a big deal. You just say, come on. That's all. It's not, whoa. It's not a deal. It's not a big deal. That's jnana nishtha. Because the ananda that you seek is yourself and your mind has recognized it. So then out of happiness you enjoy, out of that fullness then you enjoy the world. So he says, for the person who has understood that satyam mitya, right, in understanding that this desired, it becomes bodhita. That's the best way to understand it. It can still be there, but it's dug to bija. It's like a burnt seed. It's bodhita. It's sublated. It has no reality. It's as nitya as the rest of the world. And so the mind, having dismissed that, not being held by that, that flame resolves. Remember, for a desire, what a kamya is. This is the full form of a desire, the desire template. I need this so that I can be happy. That's the samsari. And they're not kidding. That's very real. That superimposition of Ananda onto the world is ajnana born. It's a reality. And so that's the fever. When that is mitya, when that kamya, that kamuka, the desire and the desired are as much mitya as everything else, if the whole creation has become mitya, then that fever is not there. Because the mind, even though these type of thoughts and pleasures can be there, they're taking place in the stability, in the mind, resting in the stability of my own being. So, that's enough. He's going to ask. Swamiji said one thing. He goes on and on. He's going to go. It's not one verse. It's many verses now. But they're nice. It's nice to hear it also. It's just to hear it. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamidashate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
This word snail, do you know what the what the root word is for that?
I think it's sniff.
And meaning?
Probably to attach or to care. Just a minute, I'll see.
I didn't read it.
Well, you did it. You did it. Kind of interesting that it means both oil,
yeah.
You know, yeah. Oil and fat, also oil and fat, that kind of viscous.
But do you think it has the same root? Or it's
yeah, it does. It does, yeah. Oh. Yeah. Affection is sticky. That's mm-hmm. Let me see if they give the root mm-hmm. here. Often they do. Sniff. To feel or have affection for, love, be fond of, takes the locative. To be easily attached, to be pleased with, to be kind, to be sticky, mm-hmm. viscid or adhesive, to be smooth or bland. Sometimes when you want to, for those who know a little Sanskrit, if you want to know what the root is, like this is sneha, that A you take back to its simple vowel. E-A-I, you know, if it's guna, so sne, A is a guna letter, you take it back to its simple vowel, which would be E. So sneha, you know, you drop off the A and take it back to the simple. So that's helpful when we have to have a class on the dictionary for those Sanskrit students. Because that's very helpful, like with apte. Sometimes, if you were looking up a word, like for instance, if I look up the word bodha, same thing, take it back to the simple vowel u, Bodha will be under Bud. and but O doesn't come right after U, and so you have to go back to the root in order to know where to find the word. So you have to, you know, that's why people have trouble with the dictionary sometimes.
Carol, could you do a special class on that? I'm not coming to your Sanskrit class, but I'd love to come to that class because I really
dictionary
you
problems.
Know that you're going to do it in advance. I'd love to come.
All right. Thanks. I'll set up a dictionary class.
Oh, another class.
No, it's part of our Saturday class.
Yeah.
It does help. It does. It's simple. Once you have somebody just kind of take you through it, if you know have the fundamentals of Sanskrit, even beginning Sanskrit, then you can do it. Otherwise, it's really hard to use that dictionary. You know. But it makes sense also how they do it, because you want to keep the root, the words as much as possible grouped around the root. So you have all of the words that come off of that root. It's much more easy when you look up the word, actually, because you see all of the other words. That,
Well, before I thought sneha was like attachment, and now I see like, now it has this nuance of like sticky affection.
Or,
huh?
Well, I did that to you.
Oh.
Oh, it's in the dictionary.
It is, sticky, yeah. But sticky in terms of, also just in terms of oil, that has that texture. Oil and fat. But he used that word on purpose. Nisneya Deepa, to make that connection. Yeah. Even affection, that's a word that sneha means that, but it's the understand it here is that attachment. Because knowledge does not get rid of affection or care or love. It gets rid of that attachment of having things to have to be in a particular way in order for you to be happy. That's the problem. The love and care and all of that is just natural to the upadhi, actually. It's natural to you as a human being when you're not hurt. You're not feeling hurt or afraid, you know, all of these. Where you're not, your own happiness is not at stake. Then when your happiness is at stake, there's all of these emotions come, like fear and anger and hurt and all these type of things. And then what is natural to you is covered over by these reactions. Those are reactions. That's not who you are. They're impositions.
But do you notice like there's nothing that, in a sense, and maybe I'm not understanding it correctly, but that, you know, some people say, oh, there's nothing you can do. You know, you already are that and there's nothing you can do.
You already are what?
Brahman. But really, there are things you can do to know that versus, I mean, there's nothing you can do to be that because you already are, but there are things you can do, like come to class, you know?
Well, but if the problem is you already are Brahman, but the problem is the bondage and liberation has to do with knowledge and ignorance. So you need to remove the ignorance. To remove the ignorance, you have to be exposed to the pramana. But to be exposed to the pramana, to the means of knowledge, you have to be a mumukshu. Because if you're not a mumukshu, you have no interest. And even if you were exposed to the pramana, it would be like... I'm in prison. Only because you haven't recognized the problem, and so your happiness lies elsewhere. And that's where your mind is going to be. Your mind is, for a mumukshu, who's become a jignasu, means one who wants this knowledge, this is where they want to be. Because they want the clarity. That's where their desire is. You think desire, mumukshu or jignasu, one who desires liberation. One, and that converts into jignasu, one who desires, it's a desiderative form. One who desires knowledge. And so, say you have become a jignasu, means you desire knowledge because you know that the problem is ignorance. The problem of bondage is caused by ignorance. So the teacher has done his or her job to convert you from a mumukshu who just wants liberation to recognizing liberation in the true sense, feeling bound, but has made you understand what the problem is. The problem is one of self-ignorance. Mm. Then you become a jignasu, one who desires knowledge. Mm. And so then if you have shraddha in the particular teacher and into the shastra for removing that ignorance, then you are in the process of fulfilling your desire when you're in class, right? If the shraddha has to be there, though, because otherwise you're just, again, wasting your time. But if the shraddha is there, means that you have that shraddha that the Upanishad, the vision that the Upanishads have to give, is something that your mind is open to, wants that knowledge, you know, feels that knowledge is what I want, that knowledge, it's contained in that knowledge, is the solution. You feel that. You don't know it, but you feel you have shraddha. And you feel that the teacher is adequate to the task. That's what's necessary. Because even if you have the shraddha and the knowledge, but the teacher is not adequate to the task, then again, you're wasting your time. And then it's like, you know. But if the jignasa, that desire for liberation is there, then you become the jignasa is the desire for liberation. Right? Jignasu is the one who desires, desire for the knowledge, desire for knowledge. Jignasu is the one who has the desire for knowledge. So if that jignasa is there, the shraddha is there, then your mind will be present. It'll be there. It wants to know. Right? It's not doing something it doesn't want to do. That's necessary because your mind goes toward what it loves. That's where it's going to go. And so if it's not doing what it wants to be doing, then you'll be here in body only because your mind will be out doing what's important.
Mm. I'm a little fuzzy on the difference between knowledge and experience. Kind of knowledge that you're talking about.
Let me show you the difference.
And knowledge of like practical scientific knowledge.
This is the difference. That the difference is when I'm gaining self-knowledge, the self is already immediately experientially present as the conscious being that I am. So that experience cannot be gained any more than it is. Right? And so now, when that's the case, when I'm gaining self-knowledge, my mind now has to have the ignorance removed, right? Because the actual self-experience is already there. So it's not a matter of the mind gaining the self-experience so that then it can know it. It's a matter of removing the ignorance only, right? It's called... there's some technical words involved, but let me tell you the differentiate that from gaining the knowledge of an object. The object, the name and form of the object, is not already here. In other words, unless my mind, so to speak, goes out and assumes the form of the object, I don't have the experience of it. Right, so what we say, just technically we say, it's called vritti-vyapti. The first thing that has to happen in the gaining of the knowledge of something other than myself is that the mind first has to assume the form of that object. It's called vritti-vyapti. And then that, as it assumes the form of that object is illumined in consciousness. So there's a twofold thing happening there. The vritti has to take place, so now the object has come in, and then it is known by consciousness. That's worldly knowledge. So I require my mind to use the sense organs or the means of knowledge I have available to create a thought modification so that that can be done. Here, I don't need to, the mind doesn't, well, let's put it this way. Here I am. So there's nowhere to go in order to have the self-experience. It's already aparoksha. I'm not talking aparoksha jnanam now. Myself is immediately, directly experienced by me, not as an object, but just as the conscious being that I am. It's not subject-object, just the conscious me is already aparoksha, right? But my mind, which is not any away from that at all, you know, the very consciousness which the mind enjoys is that. Is that a paroksha? But the mind doesn't know it. And so when the teaching takes place, what happens is the mind is objectified and differentiated from the aparoksha atma. And in that process of differentiation, the mind is itself is directed toward its own satyam, its own content. And in doing that, we have what is called a vritti vyapti, means the mind now assumes the form of its very being. Right? And now there's not going to be any necessity of what we call a palabhyapti, which is the awareness illumining the vritti, because in the vritti vyapti, where the mind assumes the nature of the of its own self, right, that's already, that knownness is already there. There's no subject-object. And so that's actually a very, very huge difference. And because we don't know, because nothing like that in the is like that in the world, we only think in terms of experience. I must experience it, and then so I can know it. And so my mind has to go out and gain the experience, and then I can gain knowledge of that experience that I'm having. So we think that's all we know in terms of the way we learn in the world. So now in terms of even gaining self-knowledge, I will think of the mind traveling, in a sense, to have an experience of the big self. A little self, big self, right? So the mind has to go somewhere to gain that experience, because we think of that. We have to gain an experience that's not here, and then we have to know it. It's not this case here, because the experience is already here. So there's no, we can't go anywhere to gain the experience. We have to remove the ignorance that has caused me to take myself, right, to be other than what I am. So that's why so much, just in this little thing alone, so much teaching is required, because we're totally and correctly so conditioned to understanding knowledge, to be first gaining a vritti, right, of something that wasn't there before. Like if my mind doesn't go out and see that painting, it's not there. The experience is zip, it's not there. So we think, okay, how do I gain the experience of myself so that I can know it? That's the thing. The experience, that's the difference. The experience is already there. It's a big. That means, that's why it's so shocking to gain this knowledge, because you in the end you realize, you mean me? It's me you're talking about, this me that is already here. This me that is already me. It is this me that is already me is free. The me that I've always taken myself to be me and then added all these dress, these, this baggage on it, it is this very me that is free. It is this me that is truly the self of the body, mind, you know, sense organs, but is free of it also. That's what's so kind of shocking. Does that make sense?
It's only this knowledge that's like that thing, right?
Because everything else is mithya. There's only one self, right? There's only one vastu. There's only one thing that is self-evident. Everything else is, exists within duality and is subject to this knower-known, you know, division. And if it's subject to knower-known, then I can not experience it, or I can experience it. And you know, and if I shut my eyes, I'm all of a sudden I'm not experiencing any of you. That all of the whole room is now not being experienced by me in terms of sight. I need the vritti, and then I inquire into what I'm experiencing. But first, you have to have the experience. That's why it's so hard for people to get this knowledge. This has to be explained over and over in so many different ways.
I guess I worry about the mind falling out of its configuration, where it's, you know, that image haunts me, that the mind can, like, if it can change and reflect this, you know, and then it could also change out of...
No, you know why that won't happen? It's because no matter where it changes or how it changes or what it's thinking, the Satyam is still there changelessly. That never changes. So once the Satyam is recognized, no matter what your mind is flipping and doing, it doesn't make any difference. It can be thinking anything. But the Satyam, the self, is still there in exactly the same way. So you can't get the mind away from that because it's the very truth of the mind and it's changeless. So it's just, I mean, your mind can get lost in samsara and get off on this trip and that trip until it knows. But once it recognizes, then wherever the mind goes, the self is already there. In fact, in one of the, is it Patto Upanishad, I think? It says that wherever the mind goes, the yourself is already there.
Yeah, there's a country western song like that, too.
But I don't think that's the same. I don't think it is.
Maybe. I think it is, but I'm not sure. It could be a... I think it is, but anyway, we can look. It's one of the... It's in one of them. It's a nice verse.
One of the 108.
That's a really nice verse. Wherever the mind goes, yourself is already there. Send your mind to the... Swamiji used to say, you know, send your mind to the moon, that yourself is already there. No matter what you're thinking, what you're feeling, doesn't make any difference. If that viveka, that discrimination has been made, then the changeless being of the thought, whatever it may be, whether it be a perception or emotion or a fantasy, the vritti, whatever the vritti, the thought modification is, it's impossible for it to be away from yourself. And if yourself has been differentiated, then everything's mitya, you know. It's harmless to you.
It's interesting that knowledge makes a difference to that which is mitya. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because the one who has the problem is mitya.
Right.
Right, I mean, in terms of order of reality, the jiva is mitya, the mind is mitya, the bondage is mitya, the liberation is mitya. Brahman doesn't think, oh my gosh, I've finally been liberated or something. For Brahman, for the self, there's no bondage, there's no liberation. All that dvaita, that's all duality. But then we're the ones suffering. You know? So it's nice that there's a solution. It's very compassionate and part of the creation. That once you want out, you can want out, you know, when you want to know. That knowledge is there to know. And that knowledge comes with a tremendous blessing, a tremendous power. There's a result to that knowledge, to removing that ignorance. You know, it's a very, very wonderful result. It frees you. It frees your mind. It removes the suffering of the mind. That's why, you know, that 10th man story is so useful. 10th man, how he's suffering and suffering over the drowned 10th man, and all hell has been created. His life is totally ruined. He can never face the family of the boy that he let drown in the river. Yeah? And that ajnanam is removed. The suffering is removed. The same rope snake story is so good, you like that too. He goes through all the death pains. And thought he'd been bitten by the snake. It goes when the ajnanam is removed. And it's our situation here too. So there's a tremendous power. When the ajnanam is removed, the problems that your mind was suffering from, the suffering, you know, that fundamental suffering is gone. And that's the result. That's the power. It's gone, and nobody can tell you it's not gone because it's gone. You know? And put it this way, it is gone from your own swarupa. If that suffering is gone from your own nature. And all of the dvaita, all of the duality, the punya, the papa, the suffering, the sukha, the dukkha, all of these things become mitya, they gain that status of mitya. It's not that they all go away. They gain the status of mitya because of the stability of yourself. And the mind hangs on to that. That's where the mind revels. That's the home for the mind, is in that stability. And the mitya is mitya. It's just different. You know, it's just totally different.
That sounds like the definition of the word sublation.
That's bodhita. Yeah, bodhita, that is connected, because bodhita means the world doesn't disappear on you, the body doesn't disappear, the thoughts don't disappear, but they're viewed very differently because of your knowledge. And so the reactions upon reactions, those go away. So a lot of things totally are removed. The subjective things are all removed. But the world remains as long as you have a body, mind, sense organs, the prarabdha, the karma is continuing. This all experiences all remain. But the way you are in those experiences are different. And how you see the whole thing is so different because of the viveka, right? The discrimination. Yeah. So your mind behaves differently. Should we stop?
Yeah, thank you.